Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman, I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of the Rejected Writers Book Club.
Welcome to Blondie and the Brit. This week we are giving you the second half of Joey Pinkney's interview. He is an award-winning author, award-winning book reviewer, book promoter, and a chocoholic. He is a short story specialist and prefers the shorter mediums over the longer ones, and he's been published in various anthologies and compilations. His short stories can be found on Amazon. They are called Swiggers, 8 Simple Twitter Tips for Authors for Long Results, Cardinal Rule to Catch a Book Cover Model, and Children of the City of the Fallen Towers.
In this interview, Joey talks about his author interview service. Also, he talks about the importance of making time to write and how he finds that. He also breaks down his unique process of how he creates his books. So, we'd love to know more about your 5-minute, 5-question author interview series, Joey. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. All right. So, the joeypinkney.com 5 minutes, 5 questions with author interview series. So, that's the full proper name.
Okay, good.
But it's a tongue twister, and a lot of people just call it the 5 minutes interview. The way it was born was this. Many years ago, back when MySpace was Facebook, was the Facebook and Twitter, I was working at a newspaper, and I was trying to get into, I really love books. I had an obsession with books. Actually, I still do, but my obsession with books was, I was trying to get into the book industry. I didn't know exactly how to do so. I want to do book reviews of books by black authors, because in the media, you don't really see a lot of books by black authors except for like urban fiction or Christian fiction. Mm-hmm. And I knew there was a lot more out there for a black readership. And so I wanted to kind of like get into that and be a platform for that. And at first, it was kind of weird, because at first, before the author interview series was even born, I was doing book reviews, and it was hard to get books at first. So I was asking publishing houses, I was asking authors, and a lot of them was afraid to get scammed. They thought I guess before I came and asked, and there was a group of people out there that they take your books, like they ask the author, like, oh, I would love to read your book, I'd love to give you a review, and they'll take their book and they'll turn around and sell it on eBay.
So a lot
of people were kind of weird, and it was like, I don't know you, and I'm not gonna give you a book. You can buy one. I'm thinking to myself, if I wanted to buy a book, I can just go to the bookstore. I'm trying to offer, an opportunity here.
Yeah.
But then I guess in some sense that was big headed of me to think, who am I to offer this opportunity? Anyway, as time went by, a couple people took chances with me, and I started publishing book reviews on 2 websites. One was cbbookdistribution.com. I'm not sure if they're still up and running. And the other one was Urban Book Source. And my experience with them actually started gaining me a lot of attention, because I was like churning out these book reviews like once a week, and it was like these real in-depth book reviews that was like really digging into the characters and the lives and what I didn't like and did like and all this kind of stuff. And people were, the readers of these websites were like, I'm getting a lot of information about these books, from this guy. I really like these reviews. And I started getting, these publishing houses kind of started figuring out who I was. And I was getting like sometimes like 5 or 6 books a week.
Wow.
Just mailed to me. Yeah. So like, during the course of a month, I ended up with like 15 books, and I simply cannot read that fast. And so I was getting, all these books, and I had like these laundry bags, baskets full of books. And I was I got to do something. And I was like, what would be quicker is if I interview the author and then put the interview out. That way I can get all the information from the author. I can put it out, and I can promote that, and I can do that quicker than reading the book, digesting it, writing about it, editing the review, and then putting the review out. Mm-hmm. That took a longer period of time. So I started the 5 minutes, 5 questions with author interview series. And so I knew that 5 questions would be enough to kind of get the ball rolling. When I first started, those 5 questions were different. And the more I started interviewing authors, the more those questions started to become the same. And I figured out like the core five questions to ask that was getting like the most information. And the cool thing about the author interview series is that once the questions stabilized, the range of answers that I got from the same set of questions time in, time out was so different. Like some people were very verbose and they explained in these real long paragraphs, you know, exactly their life experiences, where other authors were very short and, you know, and terse, and they didn't really have a lot to say in terms of detail. They just answered the question.
Right.
But I really enjoyed that because it kind of gave me an idea of like, you know, it gave you a feel of like different personalities and authors. And also, the author interview series started to take a life of its own where at first it was really geared towards Black authors and Black books. Because I wanted to like even a platform for that genre and that aspect of the publishing industry. And the more I started doing that, the more I start, and the fact that, you know, I'm on Twitter and I'm putting this stuff out there and I have like it's not just Black people that I have access to, obviously, because, you know, because of this show is kind of indicative of that. But, you know, I had a global viewership. And so I had authors from like Australia and Canada and England ask me like, you know, can I do that too? And I'm just like, yeah, why not? You know, come on, let's do it. You know, and next thing you know, I started getting like Faith Evans. She's a Grammy Award winning singer. I got a chance to interview her.
Wow.
Shoshana Jackson. She's like the first Black POW, Black female POW, or something like that. But I got a chance to, you know, interview her and Ray Charles' daughter, Sheila Ray Charles.
Wow.
I got a chance to interview her. And so the author interview series gave me access to like a wide range of people. Cause you know, some of these authors are like unknown. This is their first book. They probably went through some vanity press to get copies printed up at $20 a pop or something
right.
So they're like totally unknown, totally brand new. And they just want to get their book in front of people. And then you have people that are like on the Essence bestseller list or the New York Times bestseller list. And so that wide range gave my readership like a lot to look at book wise. And I had, you know, and it was a lot. It took a lot of time and effort to put, you know, to put that stuff together and to be consistent with it. And every once in a while, when I thought about quitting, somebody would email me and they'll say something like, you know, I live in this small little town in the middle of nowhere. And the only access I have to books is Amazon and Walmart. But I can go to your website, see what authors you've interviewed, and I have access to authors I wouldn't have never heard of,
Wow. You
know,
yeah.
And that was great. I'm like, that's the connection that I wanted to make, you know, and I saw that it was being made as I think I did it for 8 years. I did it for 8 years straight, and I put it on hiatus at the end of 2014 for a couple of reasons. But one of the reasons was I wanted to start writing more. You know, I wanted to, you know, I love reading books. I love doing reviews. I love doing the author interviews. I love doing the promotion aspect too. Like, you know, you get on Twitter and you know, you're sending out these different links, quoting, you know, like perfect parts of the interview. I love all that stuff. But I'm not sure if I said this earlier, when we were talking or during the interview, but I didn't want to die without publishing something. I'm also promoting my own, you know, and so, As time went by, you know, I'm writing these different story ideas and I'm all gung-ho about one thing or another and nothing is coming out. And I was like, you know, I can keep promoting these different authors and I still do that, but I also wanted to be an author. I also wanted to put my own spin on stories and put that out there. And I also wanted to experience like what it felt like to promote your own work and, you know, have complete control of the way that you're visually marketing your stories.
Yeah.
And so, I'm sorry, I won't start off talking about the author interview series, but that's,
it's a good segue though, because you can't, there's only so much of Joey. You can only do so many different things.
That's right. You've got to pick and choose what's working for you and get your writing in. Yeah. We talk about this all the time. You know, we have to put that first.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's right. True. No, I'm saying that's something that I'm seeing come true more and more. You really have to make time for those things that you want to achieve. If you keep putting them on the back burner, you're going to wake up 5 years later saying, oh, you know what? This year I'm going to do it. You know, just go ahead and do it. Just sometimes you have to, like you said, put certain things on the back burner, you know, put them to the side for a second, and, you know, redirected focus. And for me, I think it was a great natural progression to go from, like, being the fan of authors and books and book cover designers and even typesetters, you know, like, even to go that deep with it, like, just the whole, you know, the things about the book that people don't see, you know, a lot of times you don't really see what a book is until it has flaws, you know, like when it has grammar issues, spelling errors, typesetting issues, but a lot of, you know, the real quality works that are, like, seamless, that don't have those issues, those are hard work, you know, to pull off.
Absolutely.
You know, even have, like, just one or two mistakes in a 5,000, when I said, like, an 80,000 word story, to have, like, only have three mistakes in a 80,000 word story is pretty amazing. You know, and so to, you know, to put that out, I think it's a great progression to go from being the fan of the production of books and the production of book covers and all that stuff, to go from that to reviewing to now actually reading, you know, I mean, writing, you know, and publishing and promoting my own stuff. It gives you I've had a full experience with the book world so far.
Yeah, you sure have.
Amazing. So this kind of leads us quite nicely into what the next question, which was, so tell us a little bit about your writing process. Do you have a certain way that you write?
You know what? I used to just fly by the seat of my pants and just, and I'm real good at that. Only problem is I'm real good at writing myself into holes in my plots or, like, dead end. You know, like sometimes you get so curious on, like, a specific factoid. For me, sometimes I get so curious about a specific aspect of the story. Like, if the person has a certain profession, I'm like, what kind of, like, if the person is a photographer, I'm like, what kind of camera does this person use? And what kind of lens would this person use in this situation? And that sometimes, I'm so OCD-ish, that sometimes will just make my story come to a halt. And so lately what I've been doing is, and, you know, and one thing I would say that is very key to being a writer is being a reader. And not only, like, reading stories, but also reading about the art and craft of writing. You know, and reading, like, little articles, maybe books and stuff like that. And self-education is very important to me. So I've been, you know, a lot of times I will simultaneously be reading learning materials about writing and then incorporating that into what I'm writing, like, right then and there.
Oh, that's cool.
So right now, like, I'm reading a lot about, like, the advantages of plotting your story out. And not necessarily plot to the point where you know every single thing that's going to happen in it, but plotting out to the point where you know the beginning, middle, and end enough where when you start writing, you don't go off on a tangent.
Right.
And so for my writing process now is what's actually worked for me, and I saw it happen with Cardinal Rule, who was talking about that story earlier, is my writing process is to kind of brainstorm the idea, you know, come up with something that I think is interesting. And so that's kind of like when I'm in my, you know, cancer mode. And then once I figure out, like, who this character is or what they want to say or what kind of situation they got in and out of, then I go and I'll plot it out. And lately I've been using that. Have you ever heard of the 9-box plotting method?
No.
No, tell us about it.
I'll tell you about it. But definitely Google it when you get a chance. But the 9-box plotting method is a way to kind of make sure that your story is kind of staying on track, entertaining to the reader. You know, making sure you give the reader the climax and you tie certain things in, like the triggering event in the beginning has to make sense in terms of why is this person even reading this book and, you know, why is it important. I use the 9-box plotting method lately to kind of make sure that, you know, all the twists and turns that I want to put in the story actually make sense in the context of the story, and I don't have any loose ends. And then from there, I go and I dig through the different characters that are in the story. And some of the characters, and this is something I learned from listening to the most recent show that's out there from the series.
I think it was me, actually.
Yeah, it was Suzanne.
you said something about, I think you were talking about not naming characters.
Exactly. Yeah, we were told that
That character is going to pop up and has an importance. And if you name a character and don't really give them any importance, like kind of name them on a, you know, a pass by, and you never really go back to the character, in the reader's mind, that's a loose end that hasn't been tied up.
Right.
What I do is, I'll use this last two stories. You know what? I'm gonna tell what I'm trying to get across, you guys. I'll tell it in the context of the first short story I published and the most recent short story I published.
Oh, cool.
This actually kind of ties in. So Swiggers is a story that follows this guy. He's like, I would say he's kind of like the alpha male in his group. It's a group of old guys who like to sit outside the corner store, drink their drinks, and, you know, crack jokes, and, you know, just laugh with each other, just hang out. And he's kind of like the lead joke telling guy. So everybody loves for him to be around because they know that, you know, that's when the fun kicks in, because he's going to crack jokes on everybody. He has a funny story to tell. And this particular character has, you know, I named his friends, you know, the guys that's in his group, and I named the store owner. But it was a couple other people that I named in the story that I didn't realize that I did. I didn't realize that I gave them names. In hindsight, I wouldn't have, but I'm glad the mistake was there, because there is a small scene in Swiggers where one of Teddy's friends, Teddy's the main character, one of Teddy's friends asks him about one of his love interests, and he asked about this woman by name, and I didn't realize that I gave that woman a name until I was writing Cardinal Rule, which is the book. I published Cardinal Rule in August of 2015. That was the story I was telling you about that I wrote, and it really inspired me to go ahead and just put something out there and not keep saying I'm going to do it, but actually do it. Earlene Jones is the main character, and she's going to be a brand upon herself. Like, women, female readers have really gravitated towards her and her self-awareness, you know, and her cool demeanor. I named her in Swiggers and didn't really realize that. And so when I was searching for a name for this female character that I had conjured, I went back to Swiggers because I knew that Teddy was the male lead in Cardinal Rule. And I was pulling Teddy from a previous story that I hadn't published yet, but that was in the works. And so I pulled Teddy from Swiggers and didn't have a name for the female in that character, the female character in Cardinal Rule. So what I did was I went back to the story Swiggers and I read through it and didn't realize that in a quick scene I ended up naming her. And so I'm like, cool. I didn't know her name was Earlene, but Earlene is. And so I ran with it. I know that a lot of times people say don't, you know, I know the conventional wisdom is to not name characters and stories like that, but I think that it worked out for me in the sense that it gave my character a name and an identity, and all I had to do was just kind of flesh it out. And so what I do with these, going back to my writing process, as I'm plotting these stories out, once I get the plot solid, I would go back and I look at the different characters and I really look at what makes them tick. And I started to give them a little bit more, personality, and I started fleshing them out. And then once I do that, I just, hop both feet first in and I write. And the reason why I do so much plotting and so much character development beforehand is because I feel like as authors and as creative people, we have access to an infinite amount of creativity once we tap into it. But sometimes, for me, I know I need a foundation to wrap that that creativity around. So I look at the plot as being like, plotting as like the trellis, and my creativity being the vines growing through. The vines going to grow.
Oh.
You know, they're going to be there. And when, as soon as I start writing and I tap into it, I have enough imagination and sense of humor, and at this point, enough life experiences, I can put something into a story. But instead of having those vines going, you know, in all these different directions, I use that plot like a trellis.
Oh, I love
that. Activity around.
That is a great image. I love that.
Yeah. And so after I finish a story, then I go back through and I start writing. I start putting layers into it. Like, I like messing with numbers. I like the concept of having the number three. I like to have like a reoccurring theme of three different things going on. Like for Cardinal Rule, for instance, like the layers I was putting into that was the color red, since Cardinal, you know, is a shade of red, and Cardinal Rule is like the basic foundational thought process on a particular subject. I started looking at all the different hues of red that are active, like either nouns or adjectives and stuff like that. And I started adding those colors into it, even to the point where Cardinal Rule is like a little ice cream date between a man and a woman, you know, talking about their views on love and life and everything in between. But to go back to the color red, at first she was eating, I think she was eating the vanilla ice cream at first. But to throw red, to throw red into that, I gave her strawberry ice cream.
Oh.
You know, so I did things like that that were real subtle. Like even she had on a red sundress and her skin was like a hue of red, you know, so everything was kind of like, you know, and like I think I threw the word maroon in there as a verb, but you know, maroon is a shade of red, you know, stuff like that.
That's cool.
That's a great little thing that you do.
So when you actually look at a short story, I know a lot of times people look at a short story as being like, it's just like something that somebody threw together, but you know, I'm pretty sure like most of the great authors, no matter if it's a short story or a novel, there's a lot of detail packed into it, a lot of subtleties, you know, so I try to make sure I add that stuff in there and add like little poetic phrases or if there's a certain theme, like for Cardinal Rule, the theme of red, I kind of try to keep that in there. To Catch a Book Cover Model is another story I wrote, and the theme in that one was there was always something going wrong, like every other paragraph, like it was always some type, you know the concept of Murphy's Law?
Yeah.
I try to write that all the way through the story. Like everything that can go wrong was going wrong all the way to the end. You know, so I throw those details in there after I finish, you know, solidifying the story.
That's cool. I think it's even more pressure in a short story to add depth to it because you have such a short medium and you've got to convey, you know, plot, character, and all those other things. But to add those layers, I think, is what makes it a beautiful story, you know. Giving them something that, you know, since it is such a short piece, you've really got to concentrate it all. It sounds like you've got that down pat.
Oh, yeah, I love it. That's cool. I think that as more people see these stories, I think they will really, they'll see the passion. They'll see why I'm so passionate about talking about the creation of them. Because they actually like are some pretty intense situations. But what make them intense is not necessarily what I put into it, but it's what you bring to it. I think as an author, like one thing that you, and this really is any artist, but one thing that you know, your art is really working when it pulls in a response from somebody who didn't experience what you experienced in your life.
Yes.
But through this piece of art, you two can connect with each other. Like I'm pretty sure you've experienced this, but what a great feeling to be sitting in a room and people are talking about what you wrote. And talking about the characters and the stuff that they go through as if they're real, you know, talking about it just like they talk with the same intensity that they talk about the news. That, you know, I recently had that, and it's always great to like hear people, even if they disagree with what I thought was going on in my own story. You know, I listened to that too. That is nothing greater than actually being able to create something that inspires somebody or sparks emotion or, you know, pull something out of you, whether it's just a simple memory.
Yeah,
you know?
No, absolutely. I think that's the greatest thing about being a writer is creating an emotion out of the reader that didn't exist, you know, out of nothing. You've made this up and you've made them feel something, which is very powerful.
Exactly.
Wow, that's amazing. I think, are we ready for our lightning round? I think that this is kind of a good time to get going with that.
I think we got all our questions in and a whole lot more.
All our questions in. We did such a good job. I really enjoyed everything you had to say.
Yeah, it's a great interview.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Let's lightning him, Suzanne.
This lightning round, what is this about?
Let's do it.
Okay, you're on the lightning round. You go, girl.
I'm going to go. I can't wait. I see what comes out of this. Some of the most interesting little kernels come out of our lightning round. So, are you ready?
I think so.
I think I scared him, Suzanne.
Good.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see what happens.
I get that running scared. You get the best answers.
Let's see what comes out of your brain, Joey. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. What is your favorite band or artist?
I would say my mom.
Also, my mom.
Yeah, because being a parent is an art if you do it a certain way.
Wow.
You know, and I've actually had a chance to see her make what I thought was something out of what I ended up finding out later on in life when I, you know, became an adult myself was nothing, you know, nothing tangible. So I would have to say her.
Oh, that's cute.
She taught me a lot about the art of life that I didn't realize she was teaching me until, you know, I was much older.
I love that. So you've made your
mom. I hope your mom gets to listen to the podcast and know that.
Yeah, you know, I need to tell her that. But, you know, I'm a mom. That's one thing about me. I'm a mom as well. It seemed like in every interview, some kind of way, I end up mentioning her some kind of way. And it's not that I intend to, but, yeah, that was my answer. But I'll definitely. Now, she has to listen to the show now because she's got to hear this part.
Send it to her. Send it to her. She will love it.
Yeah.
All right. Left coast or right coast?
Left coast or right coast? I would say, are we talking about the United States?
Yeah.
I would say right coast.
Yeah, I'm with you. You're kind of in the middle there in Tennessee. But
yeah,
I know.
It's kind of hard. Yeah, it's kind of hard to pick. And then we're influenced by both sides equally. Like, you know, when you start looking at your friends and family and stuff like that and what they're influenced by. But yeah, I'll say right coast.
Fair enough. What is your favorite writing spot?
On the couch.
On the couch. There you go.
Yeah.
That works. Are you a pantser or a plotter?
I am a pantser turn plotter.
We have a few of those, don't we, KJ?
That's me. And then
you're a good group. A lot of people tell us that.
Yeah. As you hone your craft, you kind of shift a little bit, I think, is what happens.
Because of what I said earlier, you know, the creativity is there. You know, once you figure out, like, once you tap into your creativity, that's really going to always be there. But the plot and tightening that part up is not always going to be there when you first start writing. Yeah. So,
yeah. Good. If you could be transported back in time, where would you go?
I would go. I'm trying to think of what point in time in my life I need to go back to.
Oh, your own life. That's cool.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
We've never had anybody take it that way.
I would go back to middle school. My life.
Oh, you would?
Oh, my
God. You're two teenagers again.
Yep.
What would you do?
I would. Now, if I was a person outside of myself and I could talk to myself, I would definitely, like, influence myself to, you know, like, whatever you think you're going to do, just go ahead and do it. Uh-huh. Have the confidence. If you're going to write, write. If you're going to make music, make music. You know, whatever it is, just go. You can do it. I would do that. But if I was going back as myself in middle grade, I would definitely navigate my life differently.
Would you have listened to yourself if you went back to talk to yourself in middle school?
I think I would have, because that's one thing I wish I had somebody when I was younger kind of, you know, told me some realities about life and told me some very encouraging, confident words. You know how it is. When you see a child and you actually tell them, you can do it, you're actually great at this. When you see them light up, you know that's priceless. So I think I would. Yeah, I think I would.
You definitely would have been open to the encouragement, it sounds like.
Yeah.
If you gave yourself, like, hard advice, that you may not have been, like, that interested, but encouragement,
You know what? I would probably, if I had a choice, I'm sorry to belabor this particular question.
No, it's interesting.
It's starting to turn into the thunder round. I'm going to turn it back into lightning round.
Thunder round.
I would, if I had the option to tell them some cool, encouraging stuff or tell them some harsh reality stuff, I would end up still telling them the harsh reality stuff. Because I still would have liked to have been told that there wasn't a Santa Claus, like, real early in the life.
Spoiler alert. Any kids listening, turn it off. Okay, here's a good one for you. I can't wait to hear this. If you had a superpower, what would it be?
Oh, man. I think if I had a superpower, would the ability to speed read.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that one. We haven't had that one
before. Yeah, because if I can read your stuff faster, oh, man, that'd be great. Wouldn't it be great, like, if you can, like, read, like, maybe 10 times speed?
I could actually read some of my author friend's books if I could read faster.
Yeah, zip them. Like, you know what? That was a great book. I liked that. And, I haven't put it out yet. Yeah, but I saw the manuscript and I love it.
Yeah.
Love it, yeah.
All right, who or what inspires you?
Let's see. There's a lot of things that inspire me. I would say, life inspires me, you know, positivity, seeing people achieve goals and wanting to be one of those people also. I think that's what really inspires me. So I'll say, like, my mom, she inspires me because, you know, I had to say this about her. She's a great person in the sense that she's like that typical mom that'll tell you that you're doing good all the time. I take that back. When I'm actually like off track, she will let me know.
Yeah, but well, that's her job.
You know, like when she has the opportunity to encourage, she takes the chance to do that. She takes the time to do that. So she's very inspirational. My girlfriend Nicole Morant, she's extremely inspirational too. She's very supportive. Good. It's hard supporting a creative person because sometimes we're talking in concrete terms. Sometimes we're talking in abstract terms. Yep. You know, sometimes we're not even talking to you. We're talking to the person in our story.
Yeah, that's true. You know?
So it's hard, you know, to deal with a person that's creative. And then, like, for me, I think I'm halfway intelligent. So, you know, I'm very opinionated. So, you know, you couple that. So she's very inspirational. And then I would say the last person that's inspirational that motivates me is my daughter.
Aww.
So, you know, the one that she told me, you know, I was talking to her and I was joking. She knows I'm an author and she thinks I'm a famous author.
Oh, that's
you
know, I'm just like,
you know, are a famous author.
You know, and that's pretty cool, right? Somebody thinks I'm famous, so that's good. You know,
might as well be your kid.
But,
right?
Yeah, but she told me one day I was joking to her about not being able to tell. We do this thing when we talk on the phone, we do this thing called story time, but where we freestyle stories to each other. And some of them are actually pretty good. I should like record them or write them down because some of them are some great story ideas. But one thing I told her, I couldn't come up with a story. And she was like, "That's not my daddy."
Aww.
You write the story. You wrote stories, you wrote poems, you sang songs, you know, so going on and on and on. And, you know, I was joking at first, but she was actually serious. And that was pretty cool. You know, that's pretty cool to know that your child acting like really does believe that you can do something.
Yeah.
You know, do what you believe you can. So those three people, my mom, girlfriend, my daughter.
There you go. I'd like this.
All the women in your life.
Yeah, definitely.
I love that stuff.
Good stuff. Okay, which book do you wish you had written?
For as an answer, y'all get the Bible a lot, right?
No. That's not one we've ever had. If that's what you feel, say that. That's a good answer.
I was thinking that probably. I would say for me, it'd be that. I thought that would be an obvious answer. For me, it'd be 48 Laws of Power.
What's that?
The 48 Laws of Power by Robert Greene.
Oh no! Tell us about that.
It's a psychology book about how to gain or lose power in pretty much any social situation or, you know, any situation.
Oh, that
sounds
good.
And it really takes deep into, like, some of the simplicities of persuasion and psychology and also some of, like, the darker sides of persuasion and power and the desire for power and stuff like that. And, but it's a very, like, it's a great book. If you ever get a chance, definitely either download it or buy it. The introduction alone was extremely informative. It like blew my mind that I hadn't even got to chapter one in this book, and I was like, my mind was starting to ooze through my ears.
Ooh, that sounds great. Definitely selling that book. What is your favorite writing author moment so far?
I published a short story called Like Father, Like Son that was about a stepdad and his trials and tribulations with the tug and pull he had between being loyal to his wife and trying to raise his stepson, her biological child, even though she was kind of like overly protective. So the wife was overly protective of the stepson from the stepdad, but the stepson was just doing total bad stuff, you know, just like being a criminal and not going to school and stuff like that. And so he was dealing with like, how do I discipline this child and stay on track and keep him on track and also deal with how protective she is of him and not allowing me to fully discipline them. And not necessarily physically discipline them, just talk to them and get them on track. That story was a part of a book discussion of a book club in Memphis. And the coolest thing about that was I got a chance to bring my mom, her boyfriend, my brother. They were all with me. I was like the guest of honor.
Oh, cool.
We sat at one end of the table. They really did it up, and it really didn't take a lot of money, but it was just like the gesture was so grand. And so they set us up, and then they had me stand up and we talked about the story and all that kind of stuff. But the great thing in that whole experience was arguing with the book club on whether or not the character was right. And these women were so serious about their standpoint. And which was cool. Like it was no negative energy there, but we were in conflict with each other in terms of debating. you know.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. Over something you made up, which is so cool.
Exactly. Like, so these characters and these situations have such an emotional pull on you that you actually argue to me that I'm doing the wrong, you know, that I think wrong of the story that I wrote. An interesting situation to be in. But then to couple that with my mom sitting there watching this whole thing, like, she actually saw me create something out of nothing. You know, she just saw me come up with an idea, because I told her about the story idea before I even wrote it. But she got a chance to hear me talk about, you know, some of the beginning aspects of the story, and then get it published in a physical book, you know, so it's actually like in paper, so it actually means something to her as opposed to being like an ebook, you know. And then to actually be in a group of my peers, because one of the women I actually went to high school with, and so that was my inroads into being a part of the book discussion, or them picking up my stories to discuss. But to be around people of my own age, and we're like going back and forth philosophically over something that I wrote, and they're actually debating me, and it was actually like a good debate. That's been a highlight.
That's a big moment. You created that much passion out of this group of people.
Great. That's great. I love it. Actually, you know what? I'm going to add on to that. I know it's lighting around. I'm going to add on to that right quick. I guess recently a situation like that was two or three people have emailed me about Children in the City of the Fallen Towers. That particular short story has made at least three people cry.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Like, and they, to the point where they're crying, and they're writing to me about it, like, oh my God, this is, I couldn't believe this happened. And, but to pull that type of an emotion out of somebody is, you know, like, I only see that when people watch movies. Yeah. So for me to do that, it's actually like, wow,
for
I
need to do that in a short story, too, because you really don't have a lot of time. That's really impressive. And, I mean, it's for, as an author, that's exactly what you're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The feedback. Okay, one last question. One thing you wish you'd been told about being a writer?
I wish I was told early on that there is no right way to do it. Because in thinking that there's a right way, it kind of sometimes stifle you going on your instincts or, you know, taking a chance. Because, you know, before I hopped into writing, I had to ask a couple people, and I wish that's what they would have told me. But the solid advice that I did get is always study the business of writing also.
Oh, very good. Right.
Yeah, that is good.
Yeah, if you're going to be in if you're going to put your stuff in a digital marketplace, even something as simple as a digital marketplace, there's still business going on.
Yeah.
And then for you to be a creative person, you have intellectual property that you're building up. These characters actually are products that you control, that you have movie rights that you can give away, that you have other publishing rights a lot of people don't explore or don't really know about, that sometimes they sign away in different contracts that a change of a word or a change of a number here or there, you can make it fair for yourself.
So this has been so much fun. I feel like I know Joey Pinkney finally.
Yeah, too. I feel like I've met a superstar that I've been following forever. It's kind of cool.
Oh, man. Thank you. Thank you. If you see me online, holler at me. Let me know.
We will. Great interview.
This was a fabulous interview. I cannot wait to get this out to our readers. I think they're going to love it.
I hope so. I really do. And I'm glad you get, you know, once again, I'm glad y'all gave me the opportunity to come on your show to do this. And definitely, like, I look forward to interacting with y'all on other platforms and, you know, the other ways that we're going to flesh this stuff out.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited. Please join us next week where we welcome Nicole Wagoneer. She is the author of the Circus of Women series, which is out now. She's also a decorated teacher with 12 years of experience. Please join us for a really interesting interview and some great marketing tips. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com.